It's time for the second funniest podcast with your hosts, the Kevin Miller and Justin Worsh.
Have fun, guys.
Hello and welcome to the second funniest podcast. I think we're up to 448 now. This is our third episode in our drive home from Comic-Con. I'm your host, Justin Worsham. With me, as always, is the punk to all of our steam, the tomb to all of our cause, or the play to all of our cause, could also be said, the herb to all of our law, the one, the only, the KevinMiller.com. Jump and press the circle button, Kevin.
Oh, Mr. Worsham, drive me around Southern California. So, what's been great about this is that the whole time we've been driving, you've been operating the recorder.
Yeah.
You set up these, we have headphones on, as you've seen on the YouTube or the MySpace, and you're also driving the whole time.
Hold on, I just want to real quick, you set up a MySpace for showing videos? Are you talking about the Book of Faces?
Yeah, it's what I'm stuck in the year 2001.
That's what Steampunk happened?
Yeah, that's what Steampunk was really popular.
I'm sorry I interrupted your flow, but you were saying that...
No, it was not very popular. I remember one time I was... there was supposed to be a party at someone's house. We'll call it Natalie's, your wife. Uh-huh. And she sent out a MySpace message to all of us, and everyone was like, why did you send that out in MySpace? And this was like in 2008.
Wait, did that really happen to
Yes,
me?
Absolutely.
Natalie sent out a MySpace message?
I think it was before you had finished moving into LA, and we were all supposed to meet at her place, and she's like, I sent you all MySpace messages. We're like, why did you ever think that that would work?
I sometimes think that, I know that people check in on Facebook a lot more than I do, but I sometimes think that about messaging on Facebook, that I'm like, why is there an expectation that I'm going to check Facebook like it's my email?
Yeah.
Like,
well, that's the thing. Like, we sent out an invite to our housewarming party later this month, and I have to go around and tell people, hey, did you get that invite? No. You probably got it on Facebook. Oh, maybe. Because nobody reads the stupid thing.
Yeah.
You have a million invites to events that are people's shows and their comedy show and their Kickstarter. Speaking of Kickstarter, did you see somebody today at E3? Just keep calling it that. At Comic-Con, was handing out flyers for their Kickstarter campaign?
No. There's a Kickstarter that I was going to start to tell you about. Thomas Jane has his own comic book company that he does with his partner. I think it's Tim or Tom Bradstreet.
Yeah.
I can't pull the name of it off the top of my head right now.
This is what life is like without the internet.
Exactly.
But we do have the open road.
Life is a highway.
He's doing a Kickstarter to create a video game based on, what's it called? Something World... Best World...
World of the Warcraft.
That's it. That's the one.
Super Mario World.
Hopefully it'll take over, to take off and do well. No, but he's like...
War of the Worlds.
He has this comic book that he's created with this guy, and it's pretty successful. He's got like a little cult following, and so he's created a Kickstarter to develop it into a video game. And I was like, how cool is that?
That's
the
cool.
World that we live in, that you can be like, hey, if you like what we do, throw us a little bit of cash, and this is what we'll do.
Absolutely, I get that. I don't understand why walking, like at Comic-Con, you walk around...
So it'd be like you and me handing out flyers for our Kickstarter.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Like I understand...
It wasn't a booth.
No, it was just like people walking around, here's our Kickstarter, join our Kickstarter. Like, I don't know who you are, I don't know what your thing is. And then the other one that made me laugh while we were standing out in front of Comic-Con was those two Korean people that were walking around with a picture of something, and they were... Walk, and it was like a little, remember when you and I were in school, instead of having a digital copy of your yearbook photo, they'd give you like 2x4s and 1x3s.
Yeah, wallet sizes. 5x7s and 8x10s.
She was walking around by wallet size photos of some TV show they were working around, and both of them started their pitch the same way. Hello, this is a TV show we are working on. Would you like, no, thank you.
Yeah.
Okay, have a good day. Walk away like, you are going to get eaten alive.
We're just, nothing's going to happen.
Nothing is
going
to happen. Like, you just come up to have a conversation with us. We also got hit by some lady. We were in the middle of a conversation.
The GameSpot chick.
Yeah, three married men having a conversation, and that woman came. Like, I reached back my hand just in conversation. I moved it back when I was gesticulating, and I slapped her hand and didn't realize that there was a woman standing, not like to the side, but in our three-person circle as if she was a fourth person, a part of the conversation. And I realized later she was totally hitting on the third person in our conversation.
No, she was not.
You don't think?
Oh, no, she was doing her job. That's what these chicks do. It's not the quote-unquote booth babe, but there's events and promotions people, because when I worked Comic-Con last year, that there were people you could tell were good at what they did,
man.
And they knew how to kind of charm people. They were kind of salespeople or whatever. they could do it without making it seem like that's what they're doing, but they can charm people into listening to their message and getting it across, and that's how they climb ladders.
By having a conversation,
yeah, they just come in and say, oh, I'm just going to chat with you guys, and because I think that it's smart for them to just kind of come in and be like, oh, well, listen, we all know what I'm trying to do here.
That's true.
But at least I'll do it as a person instead of just a message.
I would excel at that. I would be fantastic at that because I do very well when people know what my role is in their relationship.
Yeah.
If you told me, go to this party and meet everybody there, I'd be like, no, I'll sit over here and eat these cheese puffs. But if you send me to the, they're like, here, put on this stupid costume and go get our magnets handed out. Oh, but wait, I've done that. Also, I got hit by, walking back to the car, I got hit by somebody, because you and I were in a great mood leaving Comic-Con. We were on cloud 999 doing bits with everybody that would slightly look at us. And this, it all backfired when this one lady smiles at me and waves her hand. I wave back, and she goes, talk to me. I'm like, sure. And then she launches into her Greenpeace pitch, asking me to give $25 a month to Greenpeace. And I listened to her, heard her out. She has some very important things to say. But when I said, okay, well, give me some information so I can go away and think about it, she goes, well, let me ask you this. When your house is dirty, do you need to think about it, or do you just clean it? I'm like, I guess I just clean it. Well, that's what I need you to do. I need you to get into action right now. $25 a month. They're like, no, seriously, I can't just give you money because I was walking down the street. It doesn't work that way. But Greenpeace, man, way to bring the party down.
Yeah, we had so much fun at Comic-Con. By the way, the world is ending.
By the way, they're raping the rainforests.
Yeah, would you if I was over here clubbing a baby seal, would you go home and think about it? What?
Why would you be clubbing a baby seal? Listen, I was having a good time at Comic-Con. It's not my fault I'm rich. Give me a break. Plus, I see you with your credit card machine. It ain't like you don't watch cable, hippie.
So, I want to talk about the costumes at Comic-Con because...
Well, I think she was a character, by the way. The Greenpeace chick.
Yeah, that definitely was a costume. Had a costume. Probably the least revealing costume at Comic-Con.
But
our first interaction of costume characters as we entered Comic-Con was the Lollipop Chainsaw girl, and I think the dude that she was with was Iron Fist.
Maybe. He was not as good looking or as naked.
He was in the sense that he was shirtless, which I think is an interesting...
He had a sash, though, didn't he? He had like a rope sash or
something.
That was
a bag that he was carrying.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
He had essentially pajama pants and a headpiece.
Like hammer parachute pants.
Yeah. And some kind of slipper shoe or something that he's wearing.
When I saw her, I thought, oh, certainly there will be hundreds of Lollipop Chainsaws. I only saw one other Lollipop Chainsaw.
Oh, I only saw her.
Yeah, no, later, there was a pair of Lollipop Chainsaws and a couple of Corpse Brides that were hanging out together. And they were blocking this one aisle of comic books, taking their pictures together. And I go, do you ladies all want a picture together? And they're like, no. I think we're okay. Like, I had tried to sell them on something. I'm like, I ain't trying to hit on you because you dressed up and you were in the way.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to be a nice guy. Listen, it's not all about you.
That's the thing that I think I hope is okay at Comic-Con, because here's what I feel like. I feel like there needs to be a social thing, because certain guys could get away with this. I think if you're a really hardcore guy, I think you could get away with this idea of like, listen, if you're going to show your midriff, and by the way, you're going to bedazzle it with a belly ring, and you're going to get some self-tanner put on there, and you're going to get the girls, you're going to put them up at attention and smash them together into one giant shelf of a boob in front of me.
Then wear a skirt that actually shows off your butt cheeks.
Yeah, I really think that it should be okay for me to look. I think that...
Oh, of course.
What you have done is you've created an environment where I am no longer a creepo, and I don't understand why it's even, like... Because here's the thing, even saying this right now makes me feel like I'm being creepy.
No.
Like, by putting it out there, I'm like, oh, well, you're just there. Because here's the thing that I think is a misunderstanding about guys when they see this kind of stuff, is that I really don't think guys, for the most part, right? I'm sure that there are anomalies just like anything, but there are guys, for the most part, that are looking at that and then immediately start fantasizing about, you know, doing inappropriate things. I think that you look at it in
a
lot of ways.
You say that is happening or isn't happening?
I'm saying it's not happening.
Yeah, I don't think
I'm saying I look at it and I go, I look
There's
at it.
There's so much noise here right now.
I know,
the
right?
GPS is talking. This Mack truck is driving by.
All right, here, let me get away from the truck. I actually wasn't aware of it. I was too busy listening to the sound of my own voice. But my point is that I look at it in the same way that we were looking at the art that was in Artist Alley, and that I'm like,
oh, yes.
This is an interesting...
The ad sculpting that you do.
I believe it, because I really think that there's a level of them going, you know what, like, this is what I've decided to dress myself up as right now, so... Check it out. What do you think?
What do you think?
Here it is.
You know, but so I have several thoughts. First, with that first Lollipop Chainsaw girl, it was very funny because she was just ahead of us on the walk. And then somebody, like, called at her from a restaurant, and then she's like, well, since you asked, like, double backed on the sidewalk past us and then posed for a picture, but then later, like, followed us for the rest of the convention.
Weird.
Right? Weird.
She knew who Sly Cooper was.
Lollipop chainsaw. But, you know, so many, she had a little on her face, but there were several girls that were dressed in something that was incredibly revealing, that was a bikini of some sort, or, like, incredibly sexy. And there's this there's this look in their eyes and a clenched jaw that is to say, please don't look at me. Please don't look at me. And I don't understand why. What were they expecting? That they were going to put on these costumes and show up and become the character? Like, if I wear Lollipop Chainsaw, is everybody at Comic-Con going to become zombies and I'm going to be able to actually live this out? Or is it... because that's probably not what's really happening. or... is it their ingrained defense mechanism, and they're at odds with themselves of, I wanted to be appealing and be this iconic character that I love so much, but I also have an inborn fear of rape everywhere I go, that somebody is going to attack me and molest me and touch me or look at me with their eyes. But you chose to wear nothing in a place with thousands of very sexually oppressed geeks.
Yeah, and this may be turning into the second misogynistic podcast, but I just feel like I agree wholeheartedly, and it's something that wasn't intended. This isn't what we were planning on talking about, in my opinion.
Yeah, and let me say, I'm not saying, hey, that's not my point either, of like, hey, everybody needs to dress scantily and be okay with it. I'm just saying, if you chose it, you need to own it, because you make it harder on yourself walking around covering your body in an awkward pose in a convention when you chose to wear a bikini.
Right, and here's what it does. If, especially, I don't even think, because we make fun of me and my taste on women on the show, but I don't even think it matters if you're really attractive. Guys like women, especially guys that are not gay. So...
go on.
So if you're there and you do and you're making this creepy, what you're really ultimately doing is you're emotionally sneezing your cold all over everybody else. And it's not fair to the people around you if you're going to dress like that, because we have monkeys in our brain that want to look at you. And I found myself, weirdly enough, looking at a lot of, like, hip bones. I don't understand why that was my thing, but that was my thing today, that I kept saying my monkey brain wants to see the little line next to your hip bone for some reason, and I'm not interested in your boobs or your eyes or anything like that.
Yeah, you're such a gentleman. Well, I just want to look at your eyes.
Yeah, no, I've never been a real gentleman, I don't think. Like,
that's what I'm saying, that you're like, eyes, oh, so sexy. So
I love, they're like stars above a meadow.
Oh, just
but
deep and blue.
I agree with you in that if you own it and you're cool with it, then everybody's just going to look at you. You're going to get some dude in his 40s who wants to take a picture of you.
Which is my favorite part of Comic-Con.
Yeah.
To watch that guy that finally thinks, oh, at Comic-Con is where I can lay down my game. And the girl that's always very polite, oh, ha, 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 polite joke. But C-L-O-L.
I think it's the exact opposite. I don't think that they're trying to lay down game. I think it's the fact that I don't have to lay down game. I could politely come up to you and go, hey, can I please take your picture?
No, not that.
And you politely go, okay, and then, ba-boom, I take your picture. And then there was a guy that, like, I think he was trying to compensate for not sounding like a creepo who just wanted them for the spank bank. And then he goes back there, and he saw, like, there were girls while you were using the restroom that were dressed in, like, some kind of anime outfit or whatever.
Yeah.
And he started to talk to them and say, you know, I'm really glad that you guys dress like these characters, because I'm a big fan of this and all that stuff. And I think, he wasn't even trying to hit on them. He was just trying to say, I'm not taking this picture because I think you're hot chick. And they weren't even scantily clad. He was just, I felt like that was his vibe.
Genuinely being like,
but I think that it's built into the culture that you could be a hot nerdy chick who could dress up in a hot outfit, and a guy could just come up to you and go, hey, is it okay if I take my picture? And, like, for instance, they had Stripperella was the booth, which, by the way, I think had one of the more revealing rear end costumes.
I can't believe she got away with that on the floor. I mean,
well, she was paid, and they
still. I mean, it was her ass. There was nothing. Yeah, there was nothing hiding it.
There was.
All.
Let's just say that there was a debate as to whether or not she was wearing underwear, like, because you couldn't really.
You
tell.
Don't have to. You don't have to allude to it. That was the debate.
Yeah.
we literally sat there and went, "Is that girl wearing underwear? Because that is an awful lot of bare cheek." Right.
And then
there.
The girl that was at the Total Recall booth had like an inch of vinyl or leather, whatever, in almost like the Fifth Element style costume. And
which we
just...
also saw a girl. See, but there's a big line between the girls that are getting, or the women, that are being hired to come to these things and do that. They're like, I'm a professional, I'm a model, or I'm a marketing person, so I get it. This is an avenue that I want. I want work, and this is my skill set. I understand that.
Yeah.
I'm not necessarily an advocate for public nudity, but I understand it. What I don't get are the girls that are at home that are like, you know what I want to do this weekend? My one weekend of the year.
I'm going to dress up like Power Girl.
Yeah, I want to take like 6 rubber bands and wrap them around my private parts and then walk out into public and call it a Comic-Con.
Well, I think that's a bad example, Kevin.
We saw that girl!
If you're a lady, then that's a pretty difficult thing to do. I mean, there's no leverage. There's nothing that really, it's like a Ken doll down there, you know?
What are you talking about?
I think I misunderstood by what you meant by rubber bands, and I think I'm just now figuring it out. I think that's what's actually happening
go
here.
Go on.
But I know that this seems to be, I always feel like this makes Comic-Con and this aspect has twice now in consecutive years made our show into 2 13-year-old boys talking about what girls wear. And I don't know why that is, and I wish I could understand it because it would make for an interesting conversation right now. But that there is that element that it's like, I feel like as a guy, I'm supposed to be there kind of nerding out. And nerding out implies this level of, you know, intellectual obsession with things. And it's not really physical, and that's a more jock thing to do.
Yeah, yeah.
But what ultimately at our core, and I don't really think that nerds are extra sex crazed than any other person, but I do think that as a guy,
others would disagree, but yes,
I find myself like my eye was wandering again, not just for the sake of going, oh, they're boobs, I have to see boobs. That's a very, very boiled down, concentrated version of why my eyes uncontrollably shift in the same way that they have a reflex to blink to re-moisturize themselves and refocus. But because they do, they look. But there's also, for me personally, there's a level of psychology that I want to go, I wish I get the reference? Like, there was a girl, too, that was dressed as Tomb Raider, and I caught myself, like, looking at her. And then she, like, kept looking back at me, too. And I was like, I want to go, like, hey, that's a great Tomb Raider costume. You look great. But then it's like, then because I'm a guy and I say you look great, then it's creepy because I have a wedding band on that's even creepier. When in actuality, I think that the society would be much better as a whole if girls could wear whatever they want. And it wasn't there wasn't implied innuendo if I went up to any girl and said, you look awesome, by the way. That you should be able to say, you look amazing, or that is hot, or whatever, in a polite, courteous way that isn't whistling.
Cause... You know what, though? You can, and I have. I've told women and men that I didn't know or knew casually, oh, that you look very cute today, or that's a very cute dress, or you look great. I think that you have a guilty monkey brain that makes you think that you can't compliment, because on the whole, as long as you don't go, you look great today, you say, you give a compliment. Most people, if they're in even a slightly, they have a slight dose of healthiness in their psyche, will be able to say thanks and walk away from that feeling okay.
But don't you feel that it's this thing in society?
Especially if they're dressed up in a sexy character.
That's what I'm saying, though. That makes them, the girls, feel a little reclusive, like, oh, don't look at me. Please don't look at me.
Please look at me.
Exactly.
Don't look at me.
Is this idea that there's this misunderstanding, I think, between men and women, that a guy can look at a girl, think she's pretty, like go up to her and say, I think you're very pretty. That's a nice outfit, or you look gorgeous. You have beautiful hair. Whatever. Without it being like, and now we...
Should he say that exact sentence?
Yeah,
you look great.
Whatever. Listen,
you have beautiful hair. Whatever. What can I get your number?
Here's the short end of it. I've got a room at the Residence Marriott. It's just 2 blocks away. You know, that's what I feel.
There's a mini bar.
I don't know if
I'll split it with you.
I don't know if I'm creating this. Maybe the girls that listen to the show can kind of, you know, chime in on this on the Facebook page. It is weird coming from 2 penises in a car, right? You know, trying to explain this,
which is our new podcast.
But that. I just feel like it's an unnecessary part of society that, because I've given girls compliments and had this vibe, and I don't know if I'm creating it, but I have this vibe that I feel like I'm making them feel uncomfortable, which I think is also why I think it's so funny and interesting to play like the creepy guy. Like, I do that creepy bit. I used to do it with Brooke and also Mia, where I would, you know, flirt with him and go, yeah, you know, like, I think that's funny because it kind of pokes fun at that social dynamic.
A bit.
Yes, exactly.
Right.
But let's move on because we've talked enough about
20 minutes. Well, yeah. I wanted to say that we also purchased our wives awesome costumes for their next Comic-Con. I picked up Kat an Iron Man dress.
Yeah.
And you got your wife.
I got Spider-Man.
Yeah, it's going to be
not
great.
Because I'm any more into... I got it because I think my wife... You got it because your wife likes Iron Man.
Likes Iron Man.
I this got it cool. because I thought out of all the... They had Captain America, Iron Man. Well, I think my wife would have enjoyed Iron Man. I think it would have dulled it if I would have...
Well, they would have both been Iron Girls. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it would have been the same.
But I think...
Although I think Spider-Man was the better dress. Actually, yeah. Captain America was the best
right,
dress.
Right, that was... Captain America was great.
Because it looks cute with the little midriff being right. the flag and then the yes. shield on the bosom. It looked cute.
And this is what I'm talking about, too. I think it kind of plays into what we were just talking about, is that while we're talking about this difference between guys and girls and what the... Girls, you don't have to try so hard. Like, these dresses are just simple cotton dresses that have just a layover fabric. They don't really hug or tight or try to enhance or tighten or focus in on any given area.
Yeah.
And I really think that on a fundamental level, here's what guys like. Guys like ladies. That's all they like. That's unless you're a dude who's not into ladies, and of course you don't like ladies, and we have no perspective on what you are into.
Don't know who you are.
I personally, as a straight guy, I think that you're into me. But that's a joke. And... your silent laugh scared me. And
you think it was your car?
But anyway, I think I really want to talk about, because I'm interested in, because you are a real comic book fan. Like, you grew
up... I'm not the best, but yes, I love comics. I go to my comic book store
right.
every now and then. And I have a pull box, and I have comics, and I do fall victim to purchasing stuff. But, like, every time I go to these sort of things, I get schooled. But, I don't know actors' names. I don't know celebrity names. I very few of any professional artist do I ever remember their name. And that is even more so at comics because they're so obscure anyway.
Yeah.
So I may have walked by some of my favorite artists and favorite writers today and would not have known it because I'm just not literate enough. But what I do know is a good old comic book when you see it. So there's a lot of like fringe stuff out there that's pretty cool, and people doing stuff that isn't just superhero comic books. We saw that at Art Alley a lot, and that's what Boilerplate. One of the reasons why Boilerplate looks so great because it's a superhero that's not a superhero. But that was earlier this week. But the over in Artist Alley, you see books about all sorts of different stuff that is not just guys in tights. Throwing rocks at each other, which is great. I love a good superhero book, but I'm a firm believer that comic books is an awesome medium for all sorts of storytelling and education. I think Scott McCloud proved this in his books, Understanding Comics. Like, it's a comic book about how comics are made, and you're using the medium to literally show you what comics do. And I feel like you can use comics to tell any story, to educate anything. I think in some ways it'd be better. Would it be great to have illustrations on dance moves in a comic book or about theater practices, like how to break into the industry, if instead of it just being text on a page, if the scenes were drawn out and somebody could show you, like, think of things this way, do that sort of thing. So I think there's a lot of room in for it. But what I don't know is, like, the little weird comic book about, you know, the Spider Cinderella or whatever. There's, like, thousands of these comic books out there of, you know, prom zombie and stuff. And those are all great. I just not terribly deep into that scene. But what I love doing this weekend, and I wonder how many of you also would enjoy this, is walking around to like the old school comic book collections and like seeing this stuff from the golden and silver age. It just hurts my brain how much of this stuff still exists, still sits out there, is in collection, because there's only a finite number of these books to begin with, right?
Yeah.
Of like a comic book that was published in 1940. Not a lot of these comic books were printed. And then very few of them were kept at all, right? Because they were, you know, they were considered useless rags, like magazines. They were just used for pulp. And then you would recycle them and do something else with the paper material. So very few of them have made it to this time. And then the fact that so many of them are still available for sale, that like vendors buy them, hold on to them, and then sell them at these conventions. It just kind of hurts my mind. And we go around to some of these booths, and right off the bat, they have just shelves and shelves and tables filled with these books that are selling for $20, $50, $80. $100, $200. I mean, we saw books today that were selling for $800 or more. And it just hurts my mind how much of a micro industry this is. We saw one booth where the wall was just lined with $100 comic books from from 50 to 80 years ago. They're just lined with them. And people geeking out about the grade of them, of how, what good a condition, because it isn't so much that they exist, right? Because you can make a Xerox of anything and be able to read the comic book. It's about that you own a good quality standard issue of these comic books. So, like, I looked, and I have an issue, I found it there at that one store. I have issue 19 of the X-Men. It's in pretty darn good condition. I bought it for, like, $20 when about 20 years ago. And this guy was selling it for $55, so I need to go and get it rated and see what good a condition it's in. And I have two or three books like that. I also have the first appearance of Multiple Man. I wanted to look around and see what condition that book's in. But I saw that at my same comic book when I was a kid, and I was like, oh, yes, please, let me buy this. My actual thought when I was a kid and I bought that Multiple Man comic was, maybe, I told my brother this, maybe because I bought this one comic, the owner of that comic book store will order more of that old comic, which then in turn will make the publishers publish more, which will make somebody realize that this character is popular again, and they'll bring him back and give him his own comic book. And you know what? That's exactly what happened in X Factor, because now he has his own comic book again. So, bam, I win.
Do you think he thanks Kevin Miller?
He does all the time.
He should.
They hang out with Sly Cooper in almost every single issue that was there.
Well, that's, and that is that really the crux of the comic book culture, is that collector?
No.
That's a gene I don't have.
No. Well, see, that's the thing that I don't get, and that I think is kind of, it's sort of bizarre. I won't put a judgment value on it, but I do think it's weird that, like, these guys go, like, while I was there, these people buy these collectibles. They spend $30 to $600 on a plastic figurine that lives in a box on their shelf back at home. They don't actually enjoy it. I don't understand the collectible culture for, I need to have every single one of this one particular series. I did catch that disease when Skylanders came out, but that's because it married my desire to collect with my desire to play video games. To just own a figurine as an adult, I don't understand. But to go around and buy these, like, $800 comic books, like, you've got to have money pouring out of your pockets to spend it on a rag of a comic that's probably not written all that great. The artwork isn't going to be that great. It's going to be falling apart. You can't touch it with your hands. Like, you're owning it just to own it. And so I get that, I respect it, but that's just not me. I'm not a crazy person.
You don't have the desire to collect and get the whole set?
No. Well, I do for some things. Like, I own every single X-Factor comic book that has ever been published, ever. Because I love X-Factor. It has to do with the fact that I like
But why not read it and have seen it?
I've read a lot of them. Oh, because I like to own them. That's the collector in me. I get that. But, like, spending the money on a really old comic book just because it's old, I'm not saying it's bad, because obviously it's just not something I'm into collecting. Would you shut up, Nuvi? Why is she in this conversation?
I don't know. She likes to chime in.
But I also feel like it's an unattainable goal to be like, there's no end to that collection, right?
Yeah.
If you're like, I want to collect old Superman comic books from the 1930s and 40s, you can never. I can never make that collection complete. And that's the fun of a collection, right? Is to get the complete set. That's what was fun for Skylanders. I can get to the end of Skylanders. That's what the best part about why I own the complete set of every X-Factor comic book ever printed ever is because when I was a kid, my brother started collecting the new Ninja Turtle comic book that was out, and he had number one on. He had every single one of them, and I fell in love with X-Factor for whatever reason. Well, I know the reason, but it's not important. and they were on, like, number 78 or something at the time. And my grandmother said, oh, she was helping us collect these things. And she said, oh, well, you're never going to get all 78 of these comics. Like, I'd buy number one or I'd buy number 8 or something. But she's like, we're just not going to be able to get you all of these. And now I own them all. Why? Because eBay exists, Grandma. And you didn't know that was going to be a thing.
So I wanted you to talk about and just get your insight from looking through all the boxes. Like, what's cool about being able to see it? Is it just the look, the idea of looking almost back in time to something that was printed in the 50s and looks like it's 60s, brand new? Yeah.
No, it's the fact that it didn't know that it was going to be so big, right? Uh-huh. Like any success story, right? That's why when we meet a celebrity, we want to ask them, how did you transition into becoming a celebrity? What was your success story from when you were just like me, a nobody, and became Brent Spiner or anybody that is world-renowned and famous? And because that's what happened with these comic books. Like, you read these X-Men comic books, and comic books were huge, but they didn't know, like, right, when they were writing these comic books, like, they did not know that it would reshape media and entertainment and be such a mainstay within the world. They were just striving to get by, right? It was like a very different way of putting media together. Now you have focus groups and people spend millions of dollars of market testing. Like, is this show going to be good? Is this thing going to be good? And there's just this sincerity to comic books in the 60s and earlier that were like, we writing it because we think somebody's going to like it and we really like it. So let's make a book about a bunch of teenagers that have superpowers. Like, that'd be pretty sweet.
Yeah.
So that's why I love looking at these old books. They didn't know what they were creating at the time was going to blow up to be something big. I think that's why people like Disney, a lot of Disney geeks feel the same way of like, you know, Walt Disney was just this passionate guy that wanted to make cartoons, and now he has a billion-dollar empire that controls half the world because that passion caught fire and ran across the entire planet.
And do you think, so that's really what it comes down to, is how somebody finds a comic book, like say my initial interest in Iron Man, only because I don't necessarily have that collector gene in me, that I don't have this desire, like, I have to know everything about Iron Man. Or is it that because I just didn't love Iron Man enough to be like, I have to have everything that is Iron Man?
I think it's both those things. Okay. I don't think you are a collector. And I think that there's so much, the way the comic book industry is built, there are so many comic books that you'll never get the full story, right?
Yeah, that's like, what frustrates me is that, like, if I find a TV show, like, say, like Mad Men or Breaking Bad, and then I'm like, oh,
except
I like
Boston
this show.
Legal.
I want to go back and watch all the episodes of that show so I know the story. I just want to be able to feel the story because I really like it. I really resonate with it. And in the comic book world, I'm like, oh, there is, like what you're saying, like with Skylanders, there's a limited number. But with comics, there isn't.
I can attain it, yeah.
Yeah, like, I almost feel like maybe it's like I need a Cliff Notes or you know what I mean? And I guess trade paperbacks are that thing. But
that's why DC rules right now, because they made the new 52. They stopped everything and said, okay, you know what? Come on board, everybody. We're starting over from scratch. No, if you know anything about comic books, that's all you need to know. Read Batman number one, and you're going to begin fresh with everybody else. Brand new continuity. And I think that is brilliant, because that allows you to, like, get on board right now with everything.
But then their next problem, though, is that I can't get that through my digital app. I started looking around for the new 52.
Sure you
and
can.
I looked. I haven't looked, you're right, not today. No. But when you first mentioned it on the podcast a while ago, I was like, great, I will get the new 52 Green Lantern. I will buy that every single week.
Maybe Green Lantern's not there, but I've read the new 52 Superman. That's where I read it, because it was $12 3 months later after the first issue. I'm like, I'm not buying that. It's $2 on a digital app, and I just want to read it.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm saying. I just want to read it and be able to enjoy the artwork of it and the design. And I like, it's funny how, like, I don't have the same reaction to vintage stuff, like, when I go back and look at it, because I feel like it's the same way that I would look at a classic movie. I understand it's an art form that should be appreciated for what it was at its time, but at the same time, it's obviously going to be dealing with issues that don't necessarily resonate with what I've got going on in my life.
But I love that. Like, that's why science fiction rocks so hard, right? Because it's a history of human nature. It's a history of what we care about in the issues. Science fiction is always...
But they do it with broader strokes. Like, they talk about general timeless issues that happen within a culture.
Not at all. Not in science fiction. Like, if you look at science fiction of the 1960s, everything that's evil uses nuclear weapons. The word nuclear, it's like reading Hamlet, right? You read Hamlet and you have to know that in Shakespeare's time, ghost meant the devil. If a ghost shows up, that means you were being touched by the darkest, evilest evil. Nowadays, right, ghosts are, they're everywhere. You have Casper the Friendly Ghost. It's fun. Hey, they can be cool. They can be bad. It does. In fact, most of the time, the ghosts are the good guys.
Sometimes you'll make pots with them and it'll be sexual.
Exactly. But back in Shakespeare's time, ghost meant bad guy. And so for Shakespeare's audience, they knew the moment Hamlet thinks he saw a ghost, it's like, you're playing with dark stuff. You can't trust that. We don't get that now. Nowadays, you know, you read a comic book or see a movie that happens in the 60s, it's like, oh, this is nuclear powered. You don't realize what they're saying is this is the wickedest thing ever. Like, if you meet an alien and they say, we're here for your plutonium, you know that those guys are bad news.
Okay.
So a really good example of this is H.G. Wells' The Time Machine. The 1960s film version of The Time Machine is all about nuclear war, right? That was the original book, that nuclear war breaks out, mankind goes to crap, and all this terrible stuff happens in the far, far-flung future because of nuclear war. Then, in the 2000s, when they remake the movie, nuclear war is not the boogeyman. What is?
I don't know.
The environment.
Oh, that's right, yes.
We're terrified of the environment.
The world. Yeah.
So what happens? We blow up the moon, and the moon changes everything. Because they knew modern audiences would not be afraid of a nuclear fallout world. They'd be terrified of the planet blowing up due to our own bad ideas. Funny enough, it's the same sort of idea. It's about mankind not being responsible. But it's a different beginning. Even Terminator did this. The first Terminators are all about nuclear war and the Cold War coming real, and then they retroactively 30 years later go, oh no, it's the internet, because the internet is
the technology
real and scary.
In general that's disconnecting us as a people and making us all weird. But were you overall happy with the level of comic book availability?
Absolutely.
Because that's what I thought was interesting. What I wanted to get your insight on is that, like what we talked about when we first started talking about Comic-Con, is people said it's become less about comics, and we did say that it We didn't think so.
I did not think so.
Because that was my kind of perception, that when I first went, I was like, oh, I get it. It's about movies and everything, and there is this kind of side section that's about the comics, but I still felt like, in this year in particular, that there was a lot of comics there. There was enough opportunity for you to trade, and if you had this book that you were trying to get, there was a chance for you to get it, I'm sure. Like, there was even a guy who's like, he was collecting Young Allies as a book, and which I guess is kind of obscure. And he said, do you have that one? And he was like, oh, they told him a price. He goes, like, no. He goes, I'm looking for one of lower quality, because he didn't want to drop that much money
on it.
He wanted to collect it. He's like, I know you said you had a few more, so I got your website. I'll be in touch, you know, kind of thing.
That was that site with the $100 wall.
Yeah, but
dollars on the wall.
That's a subculture that I would be interested in finding out more about, as I do. And that's what I like about Comic Book Men, that Kevin Smith show that they had. I don't think it's still around, but on AMC, it was after Walking Dead. That it was a lot of fun to watch these guys come in and, like, negotiate over toys that they were selling. And then they would also try to buy stuff from, you know, them and negotiate. I like that bartering system that exists within it that I would have liked to have seen happen. But I did see an interaction between a son father, a son, and daughter, where they were looking through that big store that you first ran into booth. And I stopped and I kind of watched them interact, and he was like, and the daughter's like, oh, I want this. And she brought up like a Legend of Zelda comic book, and he was like, okay. And then I was like, how cool is it to be, like, I wonder if I'll be able to do this with my son.
Absolutely. But
this guy's much cooler, because he was into this before he had kids, kind of thing.
Yeah.
And then I kind of go, it's the equivalent of the dad being into football and being like, this is how you throw the ball. Because what he did was, his kid was like, oh, look at this, dad, I really want to get this. He's like, well, son, You haven't finished your current collection.
Oh.
And he goes, you have to finish whatever you're working on. Once you get the complete set, then you move on to collect something else.
Well, that's the
way
he collects, but that's good. That's a good way to...
And I was like, well, but I disagreed. I'm like, yeah, but he's just a kid who's enjoying
the universe.
Yeah, he's 9. Who cares? Like, why does he have to have a complete set?
You know, and it's hard to walk by, but maybe they don't know that kid freaks out, like, obsesses about that one thing until he gets it. And he's trying to be a good dad and be like, well, let's not take on two obsessions at once, because I want to manage your addiction, you little 9-year-old addict.
You know, then you get it from me.
Yeah, you are the best comic daddy I've ever had, because you've literally driven me from Comic-Con to my local comic book store. Just, I jokingly said we were going.
Oh no,
here.
They turned it into a Euro shop in Pilates.
Oh, well,
oh wait, there it is. It's over there.
We have we are literally parked out in front of my comic book store right now. Which
DJ's
is,
Universal Comics. If
I'm,
you want to yelp
I'm very impressed. We should sometime ask this guy for an interview. We will just literally need to put the recorder down on the table and sit down and take a nap because he will just go and go.
Some
and
interesting
go.
Things that real quick before we wrap it up that I want to mention real quick because we forgot to previously is that some people might be interested in this. That there's a new design we found out through insider info. There's a new design on Spider-Man for Ultimate Spider-Man. Yeah. And then they're also canceling the Avengers Earth Mightiest Heroes. And they're making a new Avengers series that's also going to be on Disney yeah. XD, but it's more in tune with what the movie did. So look forward to that. I think they said that it was either going to be coming out this fall or spring.
Yeah, this
or something
fall.
Like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Good memory.
So I thought that was really exciting. Also, people were asking when I brought up the Ninja Turtle thing last year, they had Nickelodeon's booth was big time Ninja Turtles this year because they're launching the series in September. It has a different look, in my opinion, from that original trailer that they had. I kind of like the original trailer more, but I think it's unfair to judge it based on what I just saw there.
And they held the whole cast there, as I said.
Yeah, we saw Rob Nelson, Schwartzman, and Sean Ashton were all there signing autographs, and that's when you took Mae Whitman's picture because she's playing April O'Neil. So
and her?
Yeah.
She is so funny. She is one of my favorite actresses.
We nailed Comic-Con in only 4.5 episodes.
The drive from Comic-Con to Burbank in 3 episodes.
Boom.
These won't come out until August. But.
Give us a call, 408-228-4911, or send us an email to show@secondfunniestpodcast.com. Please, for the love of God, tell people about this show.
Would you stop the GD hammering? That's from Scrooge. Lumpy? Lumpy!
On behalf of my prematurely Christmas-enjoying friend, Kevin Miller, this is Justin Warsham saying, okay, bye!